It is my pleasure to welcome Sam Davis, craftsman, teacher, innovator, to the Ozark Radio Hour. Sam Davis, welcome.
Thank you, Dan. Glad to be here.
Sam, I've had the pleasure of visiting you up at your home and really incredible woodworking workshop up on the Arkansas-Missouri border. You've been in the Ozarks for some time, haven't you?
Yes, we moved here in the early 80s, been living in the forest over there on the Kings River, moved over from Oklahoma, and yeah, we've started out with nothing, homestead, you know, back to the land.
You are a person of a certain age, but, and I won't mention how old you are.
Appreciate that.
But you and your wife came here in the early 1980s, and I assume that back in those days, you were young people, right?
We were young once upon a time. Yep, had a small child and small motor home or a trailer house and not much else except a bunch of carpenter's tools.
How was it that you came to live in the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas? What's the backstory?
Well, place is very similar to where I homesteaded in the 70s in southwest Wisconsin. So a rural area, agricultural, rolling hills, great people. Mm-hmm. And when I met my wife in Tulsa, we used to camp over here. So we'd camp Beaver Lake, visit Eureka Springs, and thought, you know, maybe we should move over here.
So it was the natural beauty of the area that attracted you?
Yeah, the place, and then just the people. People uh-huh. you'd meet, people you'd visit with, you'd run into. I had friends years ago from Wisconsin that used to come down to this part of the world seasonally to work. They kept coming down here. They'd always come back to Wisconsin. They kept coming down.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of fell into that at one point with my carpentry work, and I used to come down to Tulsa. There's a lot of building going on, so I'd framing houses, remodeling, that kind of work. And I'd do that in the wintertime because there's more of it and less of it up north. And then in the summer, I'd go back up north and cut boards and pound nails.
I'm actually real familiar with southwestern Wisconsin, southeastern Minnesota. When I was a very young man going to the University of Minnesota, I had a newspaper route on Saturday night, and I would go to the Star and Tribune building downtown in the evening and have a truck loaded up with the Sunday edition, and I'd drive down to La Crosse, Wisconsin.
There you go.
And then deliver the newspapers all along the river on my way back to St. Paul and Minneapolis. So I know that part of the world fairly well.
Yeah, I lived a little farther south, a little town called Blue River, which was a
sure.
tributary to the Wisconsin River, about population 278 or something. So, uh-huh. yep, that's a beautiful spot. I've still got friends that live there.
Sam, I know you primarily from visiting your workshop, where I saw you building the most incredibly lovely furniture. I also saw a lot of the very artistically rendered lamps and lanterns of Japanese design that you build in your workshop. Take us back, if you will, to the early days when you were a guy who hammered boards and hammered nails. So you started life out as a carpenter?
Well, no, that was a happenstance. I actually started out working in various cooperatively owned businesses in Madison, Wisconsin. Before I ended up going to cabinet making school, but prior to that, I worked. Got involved in graphic design and worked in a print shop, did camera work, laying out small press magazines and posters and newsletters and things like that. And then I also had some time working in a natural foods bakery, Nature's Bakery in Madison.
What was the period of time we're talking about?
This would be 73, 74.
Okay.
And lived in a cooperatively owned house, lived in a house with a bunch of bakers where basically we all owned a piece of the house,
uh-huh.
and we all owned a piece of the bakery, and it was a really great experience to be able to have a say-so in your place of work and in your housing situation. So I kind of got spoiled early on. And then kind of it's the carpentry kind of started, I'd say, out of necessity. You're living in an old house, which was built before World War One. Things break. Things get flooded. Things get cracked. Things need to be fixed. So you kind of have to be able to develop some proficiency at those things to make your home as livable as possible. And then I had an opportunity to go to technical school. So I took a program in Madison at a technical college in cabinet making. So that kind of got me off on a whole another pathway at that point, which led later to general carpentry and furniture building and such.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought of yourself primarily as a cabinet maker?
I guess I'd say as a woodworker. I would take the broader term.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been kind of a generalist in most anything that I've worked on. Even when I was teaching science in school for a number of years, I liked all the sciences. So I constantly would connect, you know, the life sciences, physical sciences, chemistry, physics, biology, environmental science. They all connected to me. And my approach to woodworking has kind of been the same way. I'll venture off into different pathways of branches of woodworking, cabinet making, house building, and now furniture making, and of course house repair and furniture making. But to me, it's trees.
So you worked as a carpenter in the beginning of your career, as the foundation of your career, was mostly the way you held the family together and paid your way through the world?
Yep. There were a lot of, that type of work is definitely not a get-rich-quick scheme by any means. Anything that came along, you know, you build a tobacco barn, in this case of Wisconsin, you could be doing timber framing, you could be fixing rotten bathroom floors or replacing roofs or building kitchens or whatever needed to happen. So I loved all of it. It was all good. Not so much fixing bathrooms, but I've taken a little bit of all those things along the way to make the soup that I'm drinking from now.
All right. You and your new wife and new baby arrived in Eureka Springs about what year?
It'd be 84. We bought 35 acres on the Kings River in 82, and then my wife had been laid off a couple times, and the last layoff was like, I think that's a sign. We need to just go to the land. We've got a nice piece of acreage. We don't have anything else but trees, but we're going. So we went, made the leap, and bought an old ratty old trailer house, and I started doing carpentry work in the area, mostly. Well, in Berryville, a little bit in Eureka, Holiday Island. Spent a couple of years working on Thorn Crown Church over there. That was a pretty good job. Not the glass chapel, but the kind of the convocation center or whatever they call it now, on the hill with the big steeple. So I got to work on the steeple and the skylights.
And you're talking about the Faye Jones Chapel.
Yes, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think Faye Jones had designed both the glass chapel and the kind of church next to it there. So it got kind of mixed in with the local carpenters, some of whom are still.
So while all of this was going on, you and your wife were living in a what you describe as a ratty old trailer out in the woods. And you built what I think is one of the most lovely and beautiful homes I've seen in the area. Talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, sure. Well, it was kind of predicated on a lie, basically, where I told my wife, you know, we'll move in this trailer. It might be a year or two. We'll get the house going here. We'll get rid of the trailer. And then pretty soon it was 6 years later. and then it was another, 20 years before it was completely finished, which was 2015.
Yeah. So describe the house.
Well, the house started from an old article in Mother Earth News back in the 70s, written by Rob Roy, who was a cordwood aficionado, cordwood guru in North America. And he had this earthwood was the house that he built. It was an earth-covered roof, basically cutting logs like firewood and stacking them up to make walls with mortar in between the logs. So we thought, well, we'll just do that. So we designed and built a roundhouse. We skipped the earth-covered part, and it's two stories. The lower story is partially underground. It functions quite well. It's very it's hard to leave the house, frankly, because it's such a you feel so good in there in that curved space with a high ceiling, and you're surrounded by logs. It's, there's something very elemental about it. And we proceeded to peck away at it. You know, when I was teaching school, every summer would be house construction time. So construction season was from about the 1st of June till the 1st of August. Mm-hmm. So we'd pick a couple projects, start working on that. School would start back up, things would quiet down, and we'd keep returning to that cycle for a number of years because we really didn't want to have any debt. So right. It was basically a owner-built, pay-as-you-go operation. So when you save up a couple $100, you go, okay, let's get a window. Okay, let's get some flooring.
Well, it is a marvelous house. I mean, a beautiful house, and I really enjoyed being there. It did have that feeling of calm and peacefulness when I had the privilege of walking around it with you.
Well, it was a pleasure to show you around the place. Uh-huh. It's home.
Sometime during this period, you decided to become a public school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
When was that, and what was that about?
In 89, I got really ill with a rare form of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. So here I was 36, 37, something, 37, 38 years old, and got really ill and ended up wheelchair bound, using a walker. I had both my hip joints replaced. So it was a major life-changing, life-altering experience.
Uh-huh.
At that point, it was like, I think carpentry is past its time. So I had an opportunity. I got some financial assistance from the state at that time and some grant money. State needed science teachers. I'd always had an interest in science. I had an incomplete bachelor's degree from way back at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So I still had some credits there and was able to go back to school and finish a bachelor's in education at Fayetteville, and then started teaching at Berryville.
Mm-hmm.
Taught science there for 11 years, and in the meantime got a master's degree, and really I loved it. I mean, I've been really fortunate. My years of carpentering and graphic designing and all of the little stops along the way have been really rewarding. And teaching was really kind of a high point. I kept having experiences that I kept thinking, like, this couldn't get any better than the last thing. And yet, it was better than the last thing. So it was kind of like we took a trip to France a couple of years ago. And with each meal, it was like, this was the best meal I've ever had. I cannot believe how good this is. And then comes lunch, and you go, oh, my God, I can't believe how good this meal is. This is the best meal I've ever had. So now I'm building furniture, and I'm having the best time I've ever had. Plus, now I returned to teaching, so I've been teaching furniture making. So this is combining the roots and the branches and the tree come together. The teaching and the wood have come full circle here.
Uh-huh. Well, how long did you teach in the Berryville, Arkansas public school?
I was a high school science teacher for 11 years.
11 years. Okay. And so after 11 years, you transitioned into being a full-time cabinet maker, furniture maker?
Of course not. It's never that easy. No, we had another major upheaval in our lives at home. My wife Sue was in a really bad car accident that just damn near killed her, and had a brain injury, and so we had to roll into a whole new life plan at that point.
Hmm.
While she was recovering, I had a job change and went to work doing teacher professional development. Ah. So I was developing programs for training with science teachers and working with science teachers in their classrooms on, you know, methods of instruction and techniques they can use and tools they can use to grow as science teachers. So I had a few years in there. and then retired. So at the point of retirement, it was time to go, okay, back to the woods, back to the trees and the lumber and the sawdust and the splinters.
Give our listeners a tour of your workshop.
Well, again, I was fortunate enough to be in a position to build a shop. I've had over the years shops in basements, garages, back porch, an attic. I had a shop next to a strip club. That was exciting. And more recently, at our home here on the Kings River, my shop was in my garage for 20 years. So when I had a chance to build a shop and had the resources to do it, I had a pretty solid idea on what it was, what space I wanted to create. The basic principle of it, I designed it and then hired a couple carpenter friends to help me build it, was that I could go to work as unencumbered as possible. So a space that was, you know, environmentally comfortable, had good lighting, ventilation, dust collection, higher ceilings. I designed the lighting to accommodate my aging eyes, so it's brighter than the normal lighting to work with my aging. I had a space to put in a small studio for doing my design work, space for a finishing room, space for material storage, and then a large area for tools and machinery and for a central bench.
Wow.
So really, it's been every day I go out there, I just want to kiss myself, but I can't reach.
Well, it was one of the things I felt also when I went through your shop, just what a peaceful, lovely bit of space it was in which to work. And you create beautiful things there. You want to talk a little bit about what you make in your wonderful shop?
Well, it's kind of back to kind of the generalist thing. I've never really focused on one thing for more than several years at a time. I tend to come upon a new area of woodworking and go, oh, that looks interesting. I want to learn some more about that. And then after a period of time, pretty soon I'm designing things along that line and I'm building things along that line, and I'll ride that until something else comes along and I go, oh, wait a minute, this thing over here looks really interesting. I've always wanted to build one of those. Hmm. And of course, along the way, I've kind of narrowed down into a focus on joinery and really developing some good hand tool skills. So I was out in Portland a couple of years ago at Powell's Bookstore, which is a strong, you've been there.
Yeah. I have been there.
Yeah. It's an institution. So I was up in the, I thought, well, I'll go check out the woodworking section. And I was up the fourth floor or something. It's like a big building. It's like a square block of four or five stories. I got up there and I thought, well, maybe there'll be a couple shelves of woodworking books. There was just this whole row. And so I got lost in there for a few hours and just stumbled across a book by a artist from British Columbia who designed Japanese-style lamps, and that really appealed to me. So I brought that home and built one or two similar to what he had in his book, and then ventured off into my own designs, and really have enjoyed the combination of wood, mulberry paper, and the and light together. And now I've added some ink illustrations. So I've been illustrating the shoji paper that goes into the lamps.
And I should let our listeners know that you have a website. Mm-hmm. Where folks can see photographs and images.
Yep.
And why don't you give that address?
Yes. samdweb.com. You're welcome to go peruse around in there. I would issue a word of caution that it does get into a bit of detail. So if you're interested in the kind of the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts, I really enjoy thoroughly dissecting what I'm doing. It helps me to make the next thing even better, and it's helpful to my students as well.
What was it about the Japanese design that appealed to you?
The lines, the shallow curves really appealed to me. the spareness, the and the shapes. Uh-huh. So it's kind of a it's like something in my brain really responded to that.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've been finding myself applying some of those design principles to other pieces, to tables and shelves and chairs and other things that it seems to be the right thing.
Uh-huh. Sam, you've been making something recently that you refer to as heritage furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Describe that for us.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled into doing pieces for people as a heritage, or you might think of it as a legacy piece of something that's personally special to them to hand down to their children or family members. So developing something that allows them to kind of make a mark that their offspring and succeeding generations can still enjoy and kind of tie back to that person or that place. One was some lumber that was milled off their farm. We made a set of Adirondack chairs out of that material, and then just finished a couple of benches, walnut benches that came from a family farm, and we designed those and built those as a gift that the friends could give to their children as a remembrance of the family farm.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of moving off into another direction with a kind of narrative furniture, where the furniture has a story to tell. It's not just something to sit on or look at or rest upon, but that has a story.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's more interesting. I'm not in the furniture making business. I do pieces of legacy pieces for people, and what I call gratitude pieces.
Uh-huh.
My friends who, you know, I have great gratitude to them for various things, and I'll make a piece for them to honor that.
Uh-huh. What I observed when I visited your shop and I looked at these benches, which are made out of walnut, I think, weren't they?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What you were making really was art, as well as something as useful and practical as a bench.
Yeah, I guess I've kind of moved basically along from like tradesman to craftsman now to artist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just I have the time and the inclination. I have a lot of time to think
uh-huh.
and explore things and to reflect and then to design. I love designing pieces, much like I loved developing, you know, lessons to teach in school. I mean, I really enjoy that, developing materials and lessons. Now it's developing designs and then being able to imagine them and to put them together.
Uh-huh. What I understand, Sam, is that you are also available to do some teaching for folks who might be interested in creating similar heritage pieces.
Yes, I've had started in the last couple of years. I've had some students into my shop, and part of my design of the shop building was to have room for students. I've got extra workbench space and extra tools and things, so kind of tying together the teaching part of my life with the woodworking part. And, so I'm looking forward to having you in there, Dan. You
yes.
Come in there and build something.
Yeah, friends, I've talked with Sam about taking some classes with him so that I could build what I think is probably going to be some shaker-inspired furniture that I can give to my kids as Christmas presents. So is that a good motivation? Is that the sort of student you're looking for, or some old person like me?
I believe you would fit the student body description pretty well.
And also younger people. I'm sure you'd be interested.
Absolutely. I just had my grandson in there this summer, so we went through a project we designed for him and built. I've also got another student. We're going to be building a glider chair coming up here, and I've also got some other tables coming in the future here too. So, if anyone's interested in that, they can
uh-huh.
contact me.
How do people get a hold of you, Sam?
That's a real good question, because there's no information for contact on my website, because I'm not really selling anything. I don't know how to answer that one.
All right.
Operating on word of mouth at this point.
Okay. Well, maybe you could make a little space available on your website.
Yeah, I could do that. I probably should. I should probably do that. If I want to teach, I got to have some students.
All right. Well, what you've just heard Sam describe is how information is shared here in small towns in the Ozarks. It's all word of mouth.
True.
But friends, I suggest you contact me here at the Ozark Radio Hour, and I'll pass along whatever requests you have to Sam, and then you'll be able to connect that way. And stand by. There may even be information available on his website soon. Sam Davis, craftsman, teacher, artist, thank you so much for being our guest today on the Ozark Radio Hour.
Thank you, Dan. It was a great pleasure.